Have you ever wondered what keeps international school heads awake at night? What are those all-important areas of decision-making that currently occupy their thoughts? What trends in international education are they focused on these days? To find out, we again reached out to the very well-connected Laura Light, Director of the Association for the Advancement of International Education. Luckily for us, Laura had met with a large group of leaders only the week before our interview, so she was able to share some hot-off-the-presses intel with us. Wait till you hear what she said. Talk about being informed. The guiding question was, what are international school leaders and directors of regional organizations currently talking about? Among other topics, Laura talked about AI, wellness, professional learning, and DEIJ. It was fantastic for us to get the inside scoop on such important topics. This episode was recorded on September 25th, 2023. Prepare to get in the know as you enjoy hearing from the fantastically well-informed Laura Light.
Hello, Laura, and welcome back to the Educators Going Global podcast. We hear that you are about to go very global, leaving New Jersey. So where are you headed?
So glad to be back with you, David and Audrey, and thank you again for having me. One of the benefits of working with AIE, actually with any international school or any international organization, is the aspect of being able to travel. And so I've been a bit on hiatus because of the pandemic, but last year people started to get back into it. But I'm about to take off to, I'm doing Bogota to Bangkok in October. So I'm going to be spending quite a bit of time, but I'm heading down to Bogota, Colombia for the tri-annual conference that's going to be held on Colegio Nueva Granada's campus. Tri-Association is a regional organization. They have about 850 people coming into their event. And then I'm coming home and quickly turning around and heading to Bangkok for two other regional organizations. The NISA, Near East South Asia Regional Organization, is having their event. And then IRCOS, East Asia Regional Council of Schools, is having their event in Bangkok as well. Two weekends sort of back to back in Bangkok. I'm so excited to be traveling again. I think you guys understand that completely.
So anything related that you would like to tell us as a kind of a going global story on this occasion?
Well, you know, it's just so nice to be able to travel again. You know, that's all coming back and coming back with a huge interest. All of these conferences are having a great turnout and lots of people coming in. The event in Bogota is going to be educators and leaders. TRI does one event a year. IRCOS and NISA are doing their leadership sessions in Bangkok. And so it will be the leaders from schools from the Near East South Asia region, sort of the Middle East area. And then IRCOS is going to be the East Asia region. And really, it's just so nice to get back together with people that we all know, respect, listen to. We learn together. We tell stories. We share concerns. We support each other. And actually, that's really what we do also at the AAIE event in February. I don't know if you want to get into that just yet, but the going global piece of working with these great heads coming together to talk about what's happening in Singapore, what's happening in Shanghai, what's happening in Bogota, Colombia. It's fascinating. And yet so many of the themes are really quite similar as we move forward.
I love it. I mean, that is the best part about education in general, is the collaboration and the idea that you can collaborate with people in such disparate communities, but yet we're all one and there are so many common underlying themes. We just love it. And that's kind of where we're going with our show today. So David, off to you.
Yes. And in our other interview with you, Laura, I used the term ultimate connector in describing who you are. And you're just telling about what is about to happen in your life as you head off really exemplifies the way you connect to other people, bring ideas forth, and create and see what are the next steps that schools can do to better serve their community. So again, your organization.
6 degrees of Laura Light.
Yeah.
Interrupted.
Oh, Audrey, but it's the same with you. It's not, it's 2 degrees of separation between all of us. And if we were, you know, we could sit here, the three of us, and talk about who we know and go from there. And in actuality, when I get to these events, many times, even if it's somebody I've just met, it's fascinating how, like, do you know this person or do you know that person? We all are part of this really, again, I said this in the last meeting, a unique world. And yet we're all, maybe it's because we're educators, but we're all in this together. We're all supporting each other. And it's just a great community to be part of. I cannot say that enough.
One big happy family.
Yes.
So very true. All right. Well, let's tap into so many of your experiences and, again, bringing people together with our big guiding question, which is, what are international school leaders and directors of regional organizations currently talking about? And let's unpack this a little bit. In our last discussion, you listed several topics that school leaders are talking about. So let's get into well-being and wellness, especially post-COVID protocols and actions that school leaders are taking around wellness.
So, you know, it's really interesting what I'm hearing from my seat and then how I work with the regional organizations and what they have to say. And I'll get into how we work together because we really work together well. But from my seat, one of the biggest pieces that we're hearing about is the aspect of well-being. It is such an important topic for so many people. In actuality, AIE's theme this year is collective care and action. And action, that means, what are you doing about it? Where are we going? What's the work that's being done? So as a result of the pandemic that we've just gone through, there is a lot of concern about the well-being of, you know, this is a really broad topic. It's the well-being of the students in the school, the well-being of the faculty. And again, realize AIE is working with the leaders of schools around the world. So it's the well-being of their faculty, the well-being of their students, but also the well-being of themselves. You know, if the leader is not in a good space, they're not going to be a good leader. And then at the same time, let's expand. It's also about the well-being of our earth. We are living in interesting times, aren't we? And the pandemic was one aspect. We look at what's happening with the climate and the weather. It's another one. So it's a really broad topic on well-being, but we are drilling down a little bit more on, how are our students doing? You know, from the news here in the United States, in actuality, in the news in international schools, you know, suicide is becoming an issue. Drug problems are becoming an issue. I think our devices and social media have caused us to have some serious questions about our well-being. And so these are the conversations that leaders want to have. They're wanting to have, and they're also looking for support. Who's doing the work? How can we ensure that our community, and that's really, again, going back to our conversation earlier, we're such a great community and the leaders in all of these seats really care about their schools. And so they want, who can I bring in? How can I help the people within my community? So well-being is a big topic. I just finished a conversation with a woman just this morning whose focus is on transitions. You know, I grew up as a third culture kid. We bounced around. My parents were like, come on, we're moving to Germany, and off we'd go. But in actuality, now there's this whole group out there that's looking at, how do we ensure that the transitions from one school to another is successful for these students? So there's a lot of work being done in a lot of arenas, and so well-being is a major theme out there.
Interestingly enough, at my last school a couple years ago now, that was a theme that the staff and leadership was working on. And one of the big science-based approaches, as you've probably heard about in talking to a lot of people, is positive psychology. And one of the places where so much of the content, the curriculum, and action steps that they're all coming from is Australia. And then we start using the term positive education. And one of the things as a counselor and a wellness coach to our listeners, I so believe in is your key word there, action. What are the steps that you're taking? And with positive psychology, teaching your children, teaching your teachers, teaching your parents about the character strengths, 24 altogether, and that we all have them, and how to grow them and how to use them in a very positive, proactive way, not in a negative deficit way. And then with the PERMA acronym, these categories of life that we can live in. And if we live them well and we're exercising our character strengths, we can thrive. So I know a lot of schools are beginning to discover positive psychology, and there's some real leaders out there helping people with that. So I'm very, very happy to hear that this is a big topic.
You know, David, you're exactly right. And you have leaders out there that are helping this happen. But in actuality, one of the other things that I really want to be a voice about is taking care of themselves too. You know, we talk about the positive education, but let's talk about these leaders who really carry a heavy load. It is a tough job. I think a lot of people might think, oh, the head of school, it's an easy job. It's really not. It is such a heavy load. So ensuring that they have the support, that they have the community to go into, and they have the knowledge of how to take care of themselves. You know, they're all doing a great job. Don't get me wrong. There's nobody I question at all. I'm just bringing the human aspect to this conversation. We all need that.
Absolutely. That's a big, heavy mantle to wear for sure. So pivoting to something slightly different, thinking about technology and how it does bring us together. How are school leaders responding to the rapid growth of AI, artificial intelligence, and the ramifications that that has on both teaching and learning? What's the scoop that you've got on that?
Oh my gosh. We had our last event in Washington, D.C. last February, and I think that ChatGPT had just come out. It was all in the news. And the entire event, which had been set up before all of this came back, the conversations were around, what are we doing with AI? Where are we going to go with what's happening? And there were lunch meetings, impromptu lunch meetings pulled together and people conversing. How is this going to change education? Because it is, let's be fair. It is changing how we do things. And for better or for worse, it is. So there was a lot of conversation. So that is still a really predominant conversation within the leadership community, within the head to school community, as to how they're going to navigate this. And there are some people doing some great work. I don't know if you've seen Global Online Academy. They're pushing out, you know, their blogs and their information. Michael Nakbar is doing some great work, but there's a lot of other people out there that are bringing this conversation up. But as school leaders, again, that's my arena, so I will always go back to that. They're really working on how is the school going to navigate it? How are the policies going to be put in place? How are they going to move forward? And the one thing I will say, as I'm sitting here in New Jersey and I watched New York City Public Schools ban AI almost immediately, kudos to the international school world. All the schools I know of said, how do we make this work? Here's something new. Here's something different. How do we move forward with this as part of the work that we do? So I just have to say hats off to, again, all the leaders out there. But it is a major topic. We are, you know, bringing speakers, guest speakers. There's a lot being pushed out for people to read and digest. But I will tell you, the running theme I'm hearing from all of the schools I work with is, how do we make it work? Not how do we ban it?
That's good to hear.
And Audrey and I, besides being wellness coaches, we're also instructional technologists. So we have been in the world of bringing technology into school and finding ways to leverage it to reach the learning outcomes. A lot of people think in the old days, oh, technology, that's just something. Why do we have to learn that? Well, the whole point behind it is it can help us get to where we want to go. And so people like my old podcasting buddy, Jeff Udick, are out there right now saying, this is just another example of technology where it can help us reach those standards and those benchmarks. Let's figure out how to work it. And just like you said, I'm sure there are plenty of people who are on. John Micton, he wrote an article for TIE talking about generative AI. They're real leaders out there. So I'm glad to hear that schools are putting together policies and then back to that keyword action. How are they going to help their teachers feel comfortable and bring, for example, ChatGPT into the classrooms to help the students? And it's a lot like with screen time and things, banning kids' access to technology just doesn't work. They're going to find a way to use it. So,
well said. And you are completely right. And it's all about building capacity. It's all about, how do we make this work and make it work well within the realm that we are all in, but building the capacity? And that's really part of the adaptive change. Really, this is, I think, one more step on changes that are coming about, but adaptive change, and I do have to do a little bit of a shout out to some work that's been done by AI. The New School Project is a really cool piece of work that was brought together by heads of schools from all around the world. We had 120 of them come together every Friday to work on this concept of new school principals. And it's all about looking forward in schools and how schools need to change and what needs to be done to accommodate these changes. And so they came up with seven principles. They talk about adaptive change. They talk about capacity. They talk about building community. They talk about equity. They talk about evidence, learning, and well-being. And so adaptive change means we use fearless inquiry to continually interrogate and shed embedded practice that does not amplify and inspire profound learning throughout our school community. So that's really the principle of the New School Project. And again, this New School Project is a project created by the leaders of this community. So I am flying the AIE flag on that one, but it is a really interesting piece as you talk about AI. But then it goes on to the learning piece. The learning principle is we ensure dynamic, engaging, impactful, and joyful learning experiences owned and driven by the learners. You talk about unpacking things. Let's unpack that. As we move forward in schools, we need to instill these sort of ideas and concepts and change to ensure that we stay ahead of the learning and offer really outstanding learning opportunities for our students. That's the baseline for all of us. We need to ensure that we have outstanding schools. And again, kudos to the leaders I work with. That's what they want. And they came up with these seven principles of the New School Project. And it kind of goes back to AI being one of the examples. How do we move forward? And kudos to them for taking that as they move forward.
The New School Project is on the AIE website. And so while we've published it, and it is in a book version, you can download it from our website. And the other aspect, which I think is just fabulous, are the people who have been leading this work, and that would be Dana Watts, Bonnie Ricci from ICASA, and Anna Sugarman, have put together sessions and videos and protocols. And it's all an open resource to anybody and everybody that wants to use it on our website. AIE wants to stand in the corner of like, let's look at where schools need to go, how they need to change, and we're trying to offer the resources needed for those leaders around the world to move forward. And everything is an open resource. It is downloadable documents. It is videos of the experts, Will Richardson from the Big Question Institute. They're all on there, and you find it on our website. Anybody can use it and have it.
It's a fantastic resource, and what a beautiful example of what you've been talking about, how this is such a collaborative and giving community. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Again, they're just great people who have done some awesome work.
Okay, I just got to say something really quick here. Is it a coincidence that dynamic, engaging, impactful, and joyful, spelled DEIJ? That's a coincidence, right?
That's interesting.
Crazy. That is awesome. So I hope nobody gets confused in the terminology, but I just thought I had to highlight that. That was crazy.
Well said. I love that, Audrey. That's an interesting combo. But equity is a big piece of this. We call it equity. You call it DEIJ. But as we move forward, these are the, you know, we commit to identify, confront, and dismantle structures and systems of inequity, to examine our privilege, and we do have privilege, and take actions to increase justice and ensure belonging. So that was the equity principle that the New School Project came up with. And again, this is what's grounded in within AIE work.
I love it. And we will get to a DEIJ question, but I just couldn't let the moment pass without highlighting that. So off to you, David, for the next question.
Well, all of this leads into professional development. How are schools developing models? And maybe, just as you're saying, breaking down the old way that we approached professional development and coming up with new ways. Because I think in the past, for a lot of schools, the approach was you would bring in that PD guru and just do big all-school faculty, one-size-fits-all presentations. But I've noticed over the years, and Jeff and I on our podcast, Shifting Our Schools, would talk about the shift to personalized professional learning, with educators having more a menu of learning options, which allows them to have more of an individualized approach to pull information in, to reach out to leaders in the field, and to kind of put their own programs together. So I'm wondering, where are school leaders in designing learning opportunities for their staff?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I'm going to get into sort of regional organizations, but your concept of menu for professional development and where this is all going. We're living in such a time of change, aren't we? And one of the things that we have seen is there's just been, maybe because of COVID, the menu or the individuality of how people do this has changed dramatically, like how you and I are getting together right now. And so you have ISS Passport, which is a huge list of professional development opportunities. They're doing an outstanding job over there. But what's happening there is changing the face of professional development of when you and I were in schools, David, or maybe when I was in school, let's just leave it at that, long ago. It used to be where they would come in and you would do it, or you would go to a conference and do your professional development in that way. In actuality, it's all gone online. You can find all kinds of courses, all kinds of ways of keeping yourself. And again, I think there's a lot of, you have to claim your own responsibility on moving forward with your professional development, but there's a lot of opportunities online. There's all kinds of ways of connecting with other people. So technology, and it goes back to your AI comment, really, or technology comment, has changed how that is all being done. But to be fair, as I said in the earlier part of this conversation, I'm going to conferences. So those face-to-face meetings are still happening. And again, I can tell you right now, Michael Adams at the Tri-Association has set up just a plethora of sessions. Some of them are deep dives. We're doing a whole 4.5-hour session on the new school project in Bogota, but he's deep dives for hours or 90-minute sessions, and teachers teaching each other or educators teaching each other. But we also have experts. The thought leaders are coming in to hold sessions in Bogota. Then the leadership conferences in Bangkok with NISA and IRCOS, and I'll get into those acronyms in a minute, are also the professional development piece. How are we ensuring that the leaders are developing, that they're staying at the forefront of the changes that are happening in the world of education? And so the face-to-face aspect is coming along. So, and then do you want me to touch on a little bit about the regional organizations, or is that a little bit later?
Well, no, that was my very next question. So please, you've segued yourself right into it. Let's go.
All right, there we go. So AIE is one of 8 organizations or 9 organizations that support the American and international schools around the world. And it's a great network. We work with Maddie Hewitt at NISA, which is Near East South Asia. She's based out of Athens. We have Peter Bateman in Africa. We have Michael Adams, who does the Tri-Association, which is Central America, Northern South America, and the Caribbean. We have Derek Rhodes out of AMISA, which is does the whole Latin America region on professional development. We have Cam Chohan at ECIS. She's doing a great job there. Raina O'Hale is based out of MACE, and she's doing a lot of work with the Mediterranean Association of Independent Schools. Then you have Ed Green, who's running IRCOS. Then you have Kathy Stetson is working with CISA. So we're all regional organizations. And again, we have changed how we do our professional development, how we do our support of schools, again, an offshoot of COVID. So I do weekly sessions and bring leaders in together. We bring thought leaders to speak with them, to have these conversations. I know Kathy Stetson is doing all kinds of online sessions in her region, CISA, which is the Eastern European region. Cam Chohan's doing a lot of online sessions with ECIS. So everybody, we're all using technology to bring people together, to have conversations. But at the same time, I cannot end without saying, we also have in-person events. And that aspect of being in-person, and I think you can take this back to your teaching and being in a class, the in-person piece is just so much more important.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that. That's a huge topic that has always been so important to me as an instructional technologist and now as a wellness coach, giving people choices to pursue not only their professional growth, but also their personal growth. I think it's so important. So thank you for that. So let's move on to another topic that you mentioned in our other episode, where you spoke about the trend in recruiting to hire educators from broader and more diverse background in support of DEIJ. So we're wondering, what are other areas of discussion and actions that school leaders are taking in regards to DEIJ?
That's a really interesting question. And a couple of different things have entered my head as we move forward on that one. First of all, I think that there's a lot of people who have recognized their own biases when it comes down to recruiting. So they put in different formats and different ways of moving forward to ensure that they are equitable as they're examining applications, as they're trying to find teachers. So kudos to the schools for looking at the process that they have in place, instilling a new process, not looking for pictures, not looking for, you know, a video interview, or trying to ensure that they are moving forward and looking at what this educator can do, what that educator brings, because we all have the biases that are ingrained in us and we all need to unlearn those. So I give a lot of credit to many schools examining their procedures on how they hire. But at the same time, back when I first started, it was like, oh, we want American teachers and coming out of America. And we all know there's a teacher shortage. And so they're starting to look at, where are other teachers? Where are the outstanding educators that we can tap into and move in that direction? So there's a lot of, again, we're living in such a time of change. Change just seems to be my running theme here, but it's coming about in that way. But really, the schools are setting up themselves to do things in a different manner. They're bringing in teams or other people to do the screening and to look at who should be considered for the position. And then at the same time, they're looking outside of the arena they had normally looked in to broaden their scope of finding outstanding educators to join their schools.
Dynamic, engaging, impactful, and joyful teachers as well.
Yeah, well, I love that. That's a great comment.
I can't believe it. So these are some interesting trends, and I love hearing. I know Dave and I have often commented on how forward-looking heads of school and international schools have been over time. So maybe we can look at a different side a little bit. What are some of the concerns? There's local and also global concerns that you're hearing about from school leaders. For example, in the U.S. news, some parents are saying they want more say in what happens in the classroom, in the curriculum, you know, and changes seem to be becoming more politicized. So what kind of trends in that area have you seen in these international schools?
You're right about what's happening here in this country, Audrey. We're living in, again, fascinating times, and the aspect of more parents leaning in and becoming more active and trying to choose the books, being part of the curriculum and going in that direction. I think international educators, leaders are watching what's happening here in the United States. And my belief is they're a little bit removed, and yet they are still dealing with it to a certain extent. Some schools are running into parents wanting to have more voice in the curriculum or in the books that are in the classroom. And so this is where the leaders come together to support each other. How do you navigate these conversations? How do you ensure that you move forward in the right way? And it's a context-based issue too. Your conversation that you're going to be having in one part of the world is going to be completely different than another part of the world. And so, again, this goes back to the leadership aspect. It's a really tough job. They have to try to find the best way forward without stepping in a big puddle and causing a big mess. But they are dealing with parents that are wanting to have more of a voice. But the other thing too, that it, and a whole nother pathway on this one, is schools are changing dramatically. You know, that's actually, you asked me, I think, David, what's their concerns? And really, it is the pathways for students. That's, while this is not so much about sort of the parents, well, it is too, but the parents getting involved, but they're really starting to re-examine the pathways, the curriculums they've chosen, what's best for the students. You know, some people are re-examining going to college. So how do these schools set up these students for success? If college is not, you know, I know when I was back in the classroom, that was, you're going to go to college. I think people are re-examining the values or re-examining the pathways that they want. And again, these leaders, that's, again, one of the things they said to me in a recent conversation. Their pathways of trying to ensure that people don't think that AP is the only way or IB is the only way. They're looking at different curriculums. They're looking at different ways of doing things. So that's another piece. And then one last piece that we're seeing, again, is changes in schools. You know, some schools are offering online programs. Look at what Avenues is doing. It's quite an interesting scenario. I don't know if you know about the Avenues schools. Well, they have their flagship school. Their main base was in Manhattan. They then opened up a campus in Sao Paulo, Brazil. They then have a campus in Shenzhen. I think they're getting ready to open up a campus in Miami or Silicon Valley. But they have Avenues Online. And so you have an entire section of Avenue schools where the students just go online. And Atlanta International School has just opened up, I think it's called AISX, Atlanta International School Online, and they're working with students who are wanting to become professional athletes. They're working with those who want to go in the soccer direction or tennis direction. And so those people have spent hours and hours on the courts or in the fields. And so now they're opening an online Atlanta International School to support those students. That's a different pathway. Give them outstanding education, but support them in a different way.
That's wonderful. Very well answered. Thank you. And I love how access to technology facilitates so much of what you're referring to with the individualization and the pathways and avenues and what have you. So thank you for that. Yeah.
I think we're going to see more of that, Audrey. I think you're going to, and again, there's this question, going back to the well-being question we had earlier. There's been a lot of research talking about, you know, high school students, are they ready for core classes at 8:30 in the morning? You know, how do we accommodate those students at different times when they're at the front of like, this is when I'm ready to do my sessions. So I just think technology is changing how we do everything.
Yeah, it reminds me of the conversation we had with Jeff Udick, who talked about he has learned so much from visiting alternative schools and the way they have always had to be super flexible and how they've managed to individualize education and create pathways for all kinds of learners who are sometimes in the program and then sometimes out for weeks, and then you just have to be ready to let them continue on where they left off and at whatever level of capacity they bring to the classroom that particular day. And it was really a fascinating conversation. It sounds very similar to what you're talking about.
You got it. It's exactly, again, fascinating piece of how education is changing.
Excellent point, Audrey. I'm glad you brought that up. And to go back and reiterate two of the themes that you're sharing, Laura, change and adaptability. So it's one thing, change, which can be scary and how do we handle this? But then when you move into adapting to it, you become creative and you come up with ways to make things work better. And then I remember the professor, I think he was out of Harvard, who wrote a book many years ago about the power of crisis and change and how we can adapt in very positive ways and make things better. And that is what you've talked about in both of these episodes, how school leaders are really on their toes saying, what can we do about this? How can we move forward with this? And going back to just what you were saying, I did want to make a comment about the workload of educators and what's happening in the U.S. And I hope it's not carrying over too much overseas. But just yesterday, I was listening to a very mainstream podcast, and they were talking about an article in The Atlantic written by a teacher just talking about all the parent communications teachers are now handling in the U.S., way beyond the normal, just what's happening for my child, how is she doing, things like that, but getting into the politics, getting into grievances and things like that. So boy, I hope that's not permeating the rest of the world.
I don't know how to answer that question, David. But I would imagine, you know, again, with technology, they're firing off emails or WhatsApp. On a side note, the one thing I do hear is the WhatsApp groups have blossomed. Is that the nice way of putting it? Or exploded? And that is a communication piece. And people are inundated with how do we keep up with all of that? It's funny. Someone just mentioned to me about how that's just raised its head. And people are like, oh my gosh, how do we move forward here with, again, a piece of technology that has just exploded? And so maybe in some ways, David, I will say that it has permeated the international school world because the WhatsApp groups are all over within the international school world. But I'm going to go back to the concept of change. And what's really interesting is we are all international school people, and I'm going to change my job. I'm going to change countries. And yet it's fascinating within the job. Many times people in international school world and actually in local schools are fearful of change, changing of how the curriculum is going to change or how you're going to meet with the students. So it's change is a really big word. And it's an adaptive change, getting on a new school project is really important. That's the way we should move forward. But I'm going to go back to one other piece, and that is managing change is heavy lifting. It is not easy to do. And I don't want to put the two together, but in some ways it does kind of open that door about crisis management. And you talked to me a little bit about where school leaders are going. One of the things that has definitely come up as a running theme is crisis management, again, an offshoot of the pandemic. And what did we learn from that? And how can we move forward? But crisis management is really an important piece of how you move forward. And there are some structures, there are some pieces. If people can understand what is needed for crisis management, hopefully they can get through the crisis in a little bit better way.
Yes, that leads us into how are school heads coming together and regional leaders in those organizations beyond, I guess, crisis management plans. I'm wondering what are some other areas that they are devising and designing for potentially the next pandemic. And off mic, we were talking about the school closures in different countries and that you're stepping in and finding out what can be done to support and kids are going to schools in other places. What does that picture look like? Back again to the pressure on school leaders and carrying such a heavy weight.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. It is just an example of how great this community is. And one of the classic examples is when you asked me earlier what keeps the leaders up at night, one of the aspects was the geopolitical issues that are happening around the world. And when Ukraine was invaded, there are a couple of things that happened at that time. One, you had the Anglo-American school in Moscow, and they're trying to deal with what's going to happen with them, because all of a sudden they're in maybe a hot seat. And the community came together to support Rhonda Norris and be there for her as she's navigating that crisis. But let's go look at what happened in Ukraine with Rachel Caldwell in the QSI school. And that's fascinating because what happened, you know, all of a sudden Ukraine gets invaded. John Zerflew at the American School of Warsaw leaned in and said, bring them on. And he actually told Rachel, you can open a satellite school on my campus. We've got you covered. And these kids came out of Ukraine. I don't know how they got there. And all of a sudden, he's actually put down containers, like crates and containers, and they put classrooms in place. I have to give John Zerflew just huge kudos for saying, we're here to support you. But at the same time, there were a lot of other people that were doing the same sort of work. Brett Penny in Romania and many of the other schools in the CISA region were doing some huge heavy lifting on supporting families, families coming in and then asking their community to support these families. Just an incredible group of people, but they set the tone for this international school world because last year you had the Sudan crisis. And all of a sudden you have Bridget Davies and she's all of a sudden shut down, locked down and isolated in Khartoum. And at this, Peter Round was at his school at Khartoum International School. He was a little bit outside of Khartoum. He is isolated, locked down, brings all of his faculty together. He puts all of his people on a bus and they drive for 2 days up into Egypt. It's an incredible story. And interviewing Peter Round would be a really good story for you to hear what's going on. But then at the same time, Bridget Davies is down in lockdown, downtown Khartoum, and trying to get her teachers out, looking for help to get them out. And they just, again, the community came together to support them, check in on them, do what they can. The State Department was incredible, moved them forward. But here's the really cool piece. Bridget Davies has now just opened up her satellite school at Schutz American School in Alexandria, Egypt. Again, a classic example of how these schools are coming together to support each other, to ensure that the students get the education that they need and the well-being and the care that is needed to ensure that they're okay. So Bridget is now living in Alexandria, Egypt in a temporary location and has some of her students there. And kudos to Schutz American School for supporting them. So it's just an incredible community that we're part of.
That's phenomenal. And just the action, back to that term, that people just stepped right up. And it reminds me, this goes way back, the way schools have helped each other. My first post was in Israel with Forrest Broman back in 1990. And some people might remember that was the time of the Gulf War. And the school stayed open throughout all the nightly scuds coming in and all that. That's just the nature of Israel. that they could handle it, we could handle it. But when the land war finally started with Iraq, they had to close the school. And so I was lucky.
Mark Ulfers was in Cyprus back then,
and he had a job for me. It was a stretch. I was going to be a science teacher. But I went there and walked on campus, and everywhere I was looking, there were students that were my students from Israel. They had left and gone to Cyprus for their education. So very similar story.
What a classic example of how this community has always been there for each other. Even, I don't want to say way back when, David, but because I was overseas before that, so I will age myself on that one, but how these people come together to support each other. And Mark Ulfers is an amazing man. There's no question. I have followed in his footsteps here at AIE. He is an incredible man, and reach out to him and get him on a podcast. His voice, his stories, his vision, and he is a visionary, is incredible.
Yeah, we have talked about trying to reach out to Mark. We'll see. Maybe another introduction, Laura. So just to wrap up, you've shared last time about listeners could reach out to you on LinkedIn. You have your podcast on AAIE. Is there any other way they could follow you?
You know, my email address is on the website. I really do most of my work when following it through LinkedIn. That's truly just the main piece of where we post our information. And on our website, we also do a AIE briefing. It is leadership focused. It is for the leaders around the world. They can sign up to get that. We also do an F3 every Friday to talk a lot about thought leadership and where we're going, and again, it's an email that goes out. But those are the best ways to get a hold of me or to follow me.
Yes, perfect. For leaders to follow you as well. I love that. Thank you.
A big part of our audience are people new to international education. We also have veterans as well. And I know that after listening to these two interviews with you, folks can say, wow, our world might seem small. We use that term a lot, but it's really organized. And there are leaders out there really thinking about us and taking care of our school communities and coming together to come up with ways to handle tough times, but also at the same time, speaking of Mark Ulfers, to have visions about where we're going next. So Laura, I've got a double thanks for you. One, for your leadership and being the ultimate connector and bringing people together. And then the other thank you is just for taking time in your incredibly busy schedule to speak to the two of us and to share with our audience. So thank you so much.
You know, honestly, it's my pleasure. It is my joy to talk about the world that we are all part of. People have always asked me, you know, how'd you find out about it? And mine was by happenstance, but it is the best job when you are surrounded by incredible people. And, you know, we talk about Mark Ulfers being a visionary. There are many leaders out there in these international schools. And I look at them and I'm just like, you are incredible. And from them, they lead incredible schools. And so there's just some outstanding work being done. I am just honored to be in their presence and be in your presence. I really say thank you for giving me the time to share these stories and to get people to really think about, go overseas, go give this a try, go be part of this world, because we are part of this world. Expand your vision and, oh my gosh, you're going to have a ball doing it, and you're going to meet incredible people like you do. So for that, I say thank you.
Thank you so much, Laura.
Thank you for joining us today on Educators Going Global.
You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and all the other usual suspects.
Please subscribe, like us, and leave a review on Apple and Spotify. And let your teaching friends know about us so we can grow our community.
Please reach out at educatorsgoingglobal@gmail.com and join our Facebook group, Educators Going Global, if you have ideas, comments, or wish to share a Going Global story of your own.
You can also find us on Instagram at Educators Going Global.
Please visit our website as well, www.educatorsgoingglobal.com. All our podcast episodes are on there by topic, along with blog posts, Going Global stories, and our ever-growing resource library. For now, this is Audrey
and David
inviting you to travel,
teach,
and connect with us.